This is Katie Breedeman for Catholic Charities. For more than 40 years, Catholic Charities Loss Program has offered a safe, non-judgmental environment where survivors of suicide can find community, direction, and resources for healing wherever they are in the grieving process. Listen to this moving podcast as Father Charles T. Ruby, Deborah Major, and Emily Tegenkamp discuss recent program developments and resources for anyone who may be struggling this winter.
Father Ruby, can we please start with you? Can you remind our audience how Loss started with your leadership back in 1979?
Sure, of course. Three couples had met at a group called Compassionate Friends, which is a support group for parents who've lost a child. And these three couples each had lost a child from suicide. And while they were helped by this group, they felt that their needs were a little different. And one of the women had a relative working for the Catholic Charities, and so they said, call Catholic Charities. And so they contacted Catholic Charities, and Bishop Conway asked me to meet with these couples, and I did. And that's really what started the Loss Program. These three couples, we met in one of the couples' homes. This is 1979. And about a year later, there was a raft of suicides on the south side of Chicago. So we began a meeting at St. John Fisher. And I was running all of both of these meetings. And we've had the New World publicized the group or the program. And that's how it started. We began getting more and more people coming, and I forget what year it was. I was able to hire Trace Gump, who was the first survivor. She worked for the Loss Program, and she instituted the obelisk. That was the newsletter I used to send out a notice to as the people joined us. I had a mailing, and I would mail an announcement about the meeting each month. And Therese then had the obelisk, which is the newsletter. And she was the first of five survivors that was the first contact for the Loss Program. She herself is a survivor, and we had four other people who followed Therese after Therese retired. Jill Scott, Bruce Engel, Jessica Mead, and now Emily Tegenkamp. We became more sophisticated with the meetings. We began after a few years. We had some of the more veteran members of the Loss Program were trained as facilitators. And so the structure of the meetings are one or two facilitators who themselves are survivors, along with the licensed clinician who has skills in the field of suicide. And that's how the program started. And now we have about 8 or 10 meetings, some of them by Zoom. Others are in person. We're just beginning now after COVID to have in-person meetings. And the value of the program is that people are meeting with other people who know their pain. And the meetings just go on. We try and keep them for about 2 hours, starting in the evening around 6:30, 7 o'clock until 9. And the meetings are helpful because people no longer feel alone in their grief.
You talked, Father, several times with me about how it's so nice now that their stigma is gone about suicide, that society is so much more tolerant and compassionate regarding the conditions of suicide being literally diagnosed as a mental health illness and a disease, just like cancer and other diseases. Right, Father Ruby?
That's correct. And I used the equivalent. I said, you know, the pain that these people are in, who complete suicide, their pain is as lethal as stage four cancer, and they just have to end that pain. They don't want to hurt people. All they have, they finally concluded, I could no longer tolerate the pain in my life. It has to end, and this is the only way it's going to end.
That's such an important distinction to make. You know, Debbie Major, can we please bring you in the conversation? Our live stream is showing some wonderful photos of the Evening of Remembrance that you and Emily and Father Ruby coordinated in November. Can you talk to us a little bit about what happens at that annual event for everyone in the Lost community?
Yes, this is really a beautiful and a special service that we have been holding annually since 2016. It's an opportunity for people to acknowledge their loved ones through a candle lighting service. Everyone's invited to come up and light a candle and to hear their loved ones' names spoken aloud during the service. We have special music. We have special readings. And it's just a very, very moving service. And everyone loves it. It's non-denominational. People are welcome to come, whether they're Catholic or Jewish, Protestant, or of no particular, you know, they don't have to be Catholic to be welcomed into this service. So I'm glad you have those photos. Well, every year, this service has been just a really beautiful, very, very moving opportunity to mourn and remember in community.
And celebrate the life of each loved one who is lost. I know that that's a fundamental part of what you do as well. In those photos, we saw one of the quilts that Father Ruby mentioned. That's such a beautiful way for families to celebrate the life and not focus on how that person died, but focus on what they accomplished in his or her life and the person that they were. That's such a more positive way to celebrate and honor that person. You know, Emily, I know that with this expansion of Lost nationwide, I'm just wondering how that's going, and is it a challenge when people are in different time zones? Because I know you go out of your way to reach people where they are, whatever stage of grief they are, whether the person that they love just recently died or could be months or years previously. So how is that working now when you're dealing with lost survivors around the country and around the world?
Sure, Katie. That was a big change for our program during COVID to move our services online. But it's really worked out well for us. And we're very fortunate that we've been able to reach suicide loss survivors in so many different areas. And we plan to continue having both in-person and online services for exactly that reason. We've certainly helped lost members who perhaps live in rural areas feel less isolated if they're not able to access local bereavement support. And so it's been really a good addition to our program. And our Obelisk newsletter that Father Ruby mentioned earlier continues to go over, to reach over 2,000 readers for each edition. So when we send that out. And I think, Katie, the point you brought up about meeting survivors where they are in their journey is very important to us as a program. For those who join us who have a very recent loss, our groups and counseling can help them to process the trauma they've experienced, help them make space for feelings of shock and devastation. It provides safety and understanding when things are really raw. And for those whose losses are further out, I feel the program really provides a setting where they can be reflective about how their loss and grief has impacted them and help them find meaningful ways to honor their loved ones and to help them move forward with their future goals and plans. And so we really think it's so important to welcome survivors no matter where they are in their journey. There's always a place for them in the Lost program.
And I would just wonder, Father Ruby, if you could talk a little bit about how you're able to minister to lost survivors as a Catholic priest. How are you able to help them, you know, deal with the pain, whether it is recent or months or years in the past?
Well, I two things, Katie, I'd like to mention. And one of them is about 10 or 15 years ago, I got a number of calls, four or five calls, from people who had lost a loved one to suicide, and they went to their parish priest, and to ask for prayers for themselves and their loved ones and so forth. And the first thing out of the priest's mouth was, well, you know, your loved one's in hell. And as a result of that, I instituted a blessing that I go into a person's home or the garage or the closet, whatever it is, and bless the place where they died, because to me, that's holy and sacred, because that's where that person was engulfed by God, and their pain ended. So, you know, the church has changed its attitude on suicide. And one thing we're doing, we're having a meeting next week out at Queen of Heaven Cemetery, where they are erecting, they're going to be erecting a monument in memory of people who have completed suicide. So it's going to be in a Catholic cemetery, this monument. We're having a meeting next Tuesday, I think it's the 9th of January, to promote this, to plan this monument. And I think this is a major step, that people now can go to this place and they could remember their loved one who has taken their life.
I'm very pleased to talk about a very recent partnership that we've had with the Chicago Police Department. Our most recent group that we've added is a group specifically for families of first responders who have died by suicide. So this is a very new group we've added. Anyone who has, if it's a police officer or firefighter that has died by suicide, the family members now have a special loss group to come to. So the police department, fire department, hospitals, funeral homes, many parishes. We reach out to schools, public schools, universities. We have many partners. NAMI, National Alliance for the Mentally Ill. And also very recently, we've been asked to participate in a research project with the HAP Foundation, that's Hospice and Palliative Care Foundation. They are looking to determine the best ways to support grieving parents. And they've asked us to participate in that, the research that they're doing.
So our annual Blessings of Hope brunch fundraiser will be coming up on Sunday, April 28th. It's the 33rd brunch for us, and it's a significant fundraiser for our program. And as Katie said, no one has to be involved with our program, but it is a big support for us. This year, our event will be held at the Westin in Lombard, Illinois. So it might be harder for some of our folks who are in other places in the country. But it's really, as Debbie talked about, our evening of remembrance service is really more about honoring and remembering our loved ones. The brunch has more of a focus on celebrating our survivors and how far they've come in their journey, and brings, you know, folks together who have been with our program since its inception in 1979. So there is a website that you can access if you go to catholiccharities.net, enable our work, attend an event for information.
Thank you for listening to this Voice of Charity podcast. Each show airs live Tuesday mornings at 8:30 on WNDZ 750 AM in Chicago, with a simultaneous live stream on YouTube and Facebook at Catholic Chicago. We invite you to learn more about ways to get involved at Catholic Charities by visiting our website, catholiccharities.net, or by sending an email to partners@catholiccharities.net. Join us as we continue to improve lives and nourish spirits across Cook and Lake Counties.